Good afternoon and welcome to the Follow Well Company. This is the Ignite Leadership Series podcast. Our special guest today is Steve Perrin. Steve is the offering management lead for automotive and connected vehicles for IBM's Watson IoT business unit. In this role, he provides business consulting and technical expertise in the areas of connected vehicles and enterprise mobility to launch new solutions for IBM. He coordinates strategy, business development, marketing, sales, and development in support of these solutions. Steve has 26 years of experience in software solutions, 17 in wireless and emerging technologies, and 9 in manufacturing. He recently published a book, My Cognitive Automobile Life, reflecting on the automotive industry and its transformation around connecting to customers. So let's welcome to the podcast, Steve Perrin.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Looking forward to talking with you today.
Well, Steve, I gave a pretty lengthy introduction and bio on you, but I didn't talk any about your family or your hobbies. So why don't you share a little bit of your part, the personal side, with us?
Oh, sure thing. Married, no children, but basically I've lived, after I got out of college, I've lived in the South and actually just around the Augusta, Georgia area on both sides of the river for about 25 years. For that whole time, kind of surprisingly, I've been with IBM. You don't find many folks like that anymore, certainly in, with a lot of these new generations. But fortunately, started with IBM in Charlotte, in the manufacturing space, and then started getting into automotive and manufacturing when BMW built their first plant in Spartanburg. So then went down, did some work for Mercedes in Alabama when Mercedes came over, then did some work for Honda in Canada. Then I started getting into more kind of where my specialty is now around connected vehicles and the automotive industry, did some work in Raleigh, and then started working in North America, and then ultimately globally with IBM's Global Business Services or consulting division, doing projects worldwide for IBM around this whole connected vehicle space. And now after I went to Japan for a couple of years on an international assignment to help, we kind of started calling it connected vehicle and telematics. Then, you know, as a lot of other things in the industry started getting connected, this term Internet of Things came about. So I work with companies on appliances and, you know, connecting these kind of things. Hopefully not your toothbrush, but, you know, it can get to that. Right. Went to Japan to really kind of help bring automotive and Internet of Things and that kind of business to Japan. And then back in the U.S., still with connected vehicles, still a global role, but around what they call offering management or what most people would kind of call product management. So I'm offering one of our leading products in the automotive space and have responsibility for marketing and sales and development, et cetera, for that product. So, and when I'm not working, I do a little bit of sailing in the area, and golf is probably my number one trouble area at this moment.
As it is for many people.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you said that you just got back from a 2-year stint in Japan. Can you share some thoughts around artificial intelligence and some of the experiences you had and where this growing field is headed?
Sure. So, you know, AI is probably, I would say, the topmost term people are using now to describe this field. And actually, AI has been around for a long time, and there's a lot of other words and other things that have been used. And, you know, expert systems was kind of one of the original words. And there's a lot of discipline around AI. In automotive, there's a couple different things. Some I work directly with, some I don't, but I'll describe both on at least where it's really kind of dominating the industry. And then the first area is something I'm involved with and our products involved in, IBM's products involved in, and that's getting the information from the vehicle and doing analysis on it. So what is that information? It could be your location, it could be your speed, it could be your braking, it could be your acceleration, how fast you're turning, you know, what the car is doing, what the temperature is, what the weather's outside. So all that data, either about you, the car, or your environment, right, can all be collected, and then they can do you know, what some people may call AI, that one of the other terms nowadays is more machine learning, but basically apply mathematics around this information and then come out with usable things. One of the most common ones in the industry that's really simple for people to understand is what's called pay-as-you-drive insurance. So the insurance companies have been looking at better ways for to understand how you drive and how that really determines your risk. Instead of something like just age, male, female, right? Now they're looking at how you drive. So you can actually start to get discounts if you don't drive a lot, if you are a safe driver, if you know you're not a heavy braker, you're not a heavy accelerator. So you basically use artificial intelligence, machine learning, right, technologies to analyze all this data from the car so that you can better understand risk models. And then ultimately the insurance companies are offering you better rates. So that's one great example. Some of the new things coming out in the cars are, and you actually see this a little bit with Google Maps and Apple Maps, but you can actually start to predict and understand based on people's driving information, kind of what type of person, you know, do they go to work every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? Hey, they stop for coffee 5 days a week. You really can start to collect and understand this information. And I had a great experience coming back from the airport in Atlanta for my international flights. I drive up there and I was leaving the parking lot, and I have a pretty state-of-the-art system that's, 4G connected, Google in the car. And I didn't touch anything, and Google automatically came up and said, hey, there's traffic on your drive home. So it knows that I'm leaving the airport and I'm probably driving back to Augusta, because if I'm in Atlanta, usually the only reason I'm there is to, you know, go to the airport. So it knew, it didn't take me to go in and check the traffic, right? Wow. So this kind of predictive and prompting type stuff, right, is this kind of machine learning. What can I learn about customers, their behavior, and then ultimately what the OEMs are looking at, and whether this is also happening, like we talked a bit about in my recent book, you know, with the personal assistants, whether it's Siri or Google or Alexa, right? Not that brings even more type of data that you can learn about somebody. There's feelings, words, impressions. All of that information can now also be used. I can kind of tell you're upset or maybe tired, just how you may be asked about playing a certain song or whatever. So all of those things can help predict. And OEMs are driving for now what they call more of these brand experiences, right? The idea that I may not be buying a Mercedes now, but if I can do things with my brand and at levels that people are associated with my brand, when they want to buy cars or they want to buy more expensive cars or whatever, they're looking at that now. So these kinds of services, because they realize now it's not just the physical thing. We were talking before the show about the book and automobile, right? And this focus on the mobile parts now, or the services part of the car, that's becoming more popular than the physical part of the car. So it's those types of things, ride sharing, car sharing, right? All of these things that now the industries and the brands are looking at to help differentiate. And to do that, you need to understand your customers. So, and if you kind of compare this, that's a different level above just what, you know, certainly most people are familiar with. You know, if you go into Google search and you search on, gee, I need to, you know, buy some car scratch or a rubbing compound, right? All of a sudden, Amazon picks up on that and now is showing you ads or whatever on other pages. That's, you know, that's not really, that's more kind of rules-based. It's really not based on machine learning or training a car to do that. Now, some of the other areas that are really beginning popular and you're really starting to see in base models of cars and even the advanced models are the autonomous driving that everybody's talking about. You know, let's not take it to the point where somebody's driving, you know, there's nobody in the car, but what's really more called advanced ADAS, they call it, or advanced driver assisted systems. And this is where you see the cars being able to tell where the lines are in the road, how close you are to a car in front of you, and kind of make that driving experience much smoother on the road. So if you happen to drift, If you have active, it will automatically bring you back to the center of your lane. Or as you come up with cars and you know, while you're cruising, it'll bring it down to the speed of that car in front of you. And then you can either go around it or accelerate back to where you are. So all of those technologies are based on AI and machine learning and training, right? Training the visual parts of the car, the cameras and the sensors, to understand lines or to understand objects in front of them and the scenarios that can occur. And then they're implemented on the road. So those are some of the real exciting areas going on right now with automotive and artificial intelligence.
That is fascinating. And where we're headed is both exciting and, I guess, scary all at the same time. You know, you've had a very successful career with IBM that has extended across many different industries. What's brought you the greatest satisfaction and fulfillment over your career?
And certainly being in consulting for a long time, right, you have to think about really your focuses, and we'll talk about some leadership principles too and stuff, but, you know, always a certain focus on the customer, right? You know, really the biggest, you know, the greatest satisfaction to me was not just to be with the customer, but to understand their problems, right? Where they're struggling, where their ideas are, combined with, you know, the type of, you know, industry experience I have, and then ultimately bringing us a solution to them, whether it be connected vehicle or connected appliances or some of these new voice solutions or, you know, personal assistance or whatever, right? And, you know, and there's all different levels of consulting, but when you can start off with the strategy, you know, and really help people kind of shape their ideas, right? And then take that, you know, through and implement, you know, through the first POCs and through the first trials, right, and ultimately to production, that's a great satisfaction. I can look back, you know, and before we went to Japan, we sold our MDX Acura, and that technology, parts of that technology that were in that car, so that was 2013-15, you know, in that area, were implemented by IBM and by our team for Honda back in 2005. So that's really exciting when you could still see some of the technology 10 years later, yes, in vehicles that you were a part of doing. Or I can go back and look at connected appliances or fleets or, you know, projects and companies that, you know, transformed and did different parts of their business around some of this kind of new, you know, AI and, you know, Internet of Things technology, as the big buzzword is now, you know, to help them really change their business. And those are exciting things. I mean, you hear the excitement and, you know, work with the teams like that. It's very satisfying. And it's kind of that thing that always keeps me going. I always said, if I get to projects and if I'm working with customers that I don't like to work with, then I need to go do something else. And it's just really never happened. So yeah, it's been very rewarding and certainly successful.
Great. Well, you know, we all have those times in life where we don't live up to either our own expectations or the expectations of others. And, you know, oftentimes those are our greatest times for learning and growth. Can you tell us about a time where you faced that, you didn't either live up to your own expectations or those of others? And what did you learn from that? How did you grow from that?
Yeah, one of the things, you know, I thought back about a couple projects and you know, a couple engagements I've had with clients, and I'm always a person of my word and trust. And, you know, when we talk about some of these leadership things coming up, right, you'll also hear in my stories where they apply, right? And, you know, when I start thinking about trust, and I'm just not there to sell something. I'm there to help build and sell. And, you know, I've had all of these different roles with IBM, but they're all there for me for a benefit from the customer, right? So when, you know, ultimately IBM is committing to a schedule and we're delivering something, and, you know, in some cases we've been late, that's really never fun, right? And sometimes, you know, we've had those situations happen where, boy, you get into that meeting and, you know, they're letting you have it. You know, how did you let this happen? What's going on? You're late. This is very important. You know, what are we doing, you know, to get back on track? And usually if you've built the right relationship with the client, right, and you've built the right kind of trust, which I think is very important to, you know, really you know, kind of in a way, get yourself out of those situations, right? Which is, you know, because again, you're not meeting their expectations. You've got to change something. And for me, it's, you know, also being back hands-on, I said, look, coincidentally, that one was not far from home. I was able to drive there, stay there. It wasn't such a problem. But, you know, hands-on, I'll be here. I'll get it fixed. I was always that kind of person that would jump in and make sure, even though that's, you know, certainly an area I know a lot about, process and project management, et cetera, you know, to really help the team create the right plans, monitor the team, track the team, and, you know, get them back on track. And, you know, ultimately, you know, first quote, what, having a delay or not meeting expectations to quickly turning around from there to meeting expectations and then going beyond that and then really ultimately carrying it out to the end. So, you know, turns out to be very rewarding. So,
yeah, I often describe that as you're stacking those chips on your side so that when you do fail or you don't meet their expectations, it doesn't even move the scale. So, you know, what are some of those leadership principles that you live by and lead by?
So yeah, I'll pick the one I just talked about, right? Really trust in building relationships, right? And I think certainly in consulting and certainly in all aspects now, even as I do product management, you know, I want people to trust me and I always want to build a relationship. I always look to go beyond what just work is to build and look beyond what is just going on with somebody. So that, like you said about the chips, right? I mean, you want to kind of create an environment that's healthy for everyone, right? And that's also trustworthy for everyone. So I've always been a very big proponent of that. The other ones, you know, and as I look at my career and I look at, you know, factors and things that mentors and other people have told me, you know, always trying to learn. I always was one of the most exciting things too about IBM now over the years has been that as new technology, as new groups, as new things come out, right? You're possibly meeting some of the top people in these fields in the world, right? And that's really exciting. And there's always something that you can learn from people. I mean, just this week and or really the last month, I've been into a whole bunch of new accounting stuff, you know, but always something to learn and always to understand, be in situations to learn and adapt and move forward. And then probably first and foremost, which I also said about, you know, my consulting and days is even as we use and focus on what are we going to build in our product or whatever, it's this whole aspect of the customer and customer first, or some of the terms you're seeing now in development are user experience design. But these are all leadership, you know, when you're ever getting astray, go back to and understand who your customer is, how they buy, where they, you know, what are they looking for, value, cost, you know, all of these types of things, but really understanding your customer and putting them first. If you do that, which I've always tried to do on my projects, whether something wasn't even beneficial for IBM or for myself, but if it benefited the customer, that was the trust I gained, you know, all of those things kind of related to themselves and has always worked well for me. So.
Well, this next question will dovetail with that then. If you had to pick one word that describes you, or what you aspire to be, what would that word be?
I would go with innovation, you know, back to kind of the learning and that part of what I've done through my career, you know, the projects I was done, I was fortunate to be doing them with, see now AI, Internet of Things, right? Or mobile when smartphones are coming out, what could people do with them, right? Always being kind of on the edge of the technology stuff, which necessarily isn't great for, you know, measurements and stuff, because you're always growing and exploring and trying to innovate into new businesses, into new areas versus, you know, an SAP consultant or an Oracle consultant, right? You know, that we're kind of cookie cutter vanilla. There's thousands and thousands of those projects a year, you know, in consulting companies or whatever. So now I really like the innovation. I like to be challenged, you know, not just with the customers, but with the projects and what it could be done, you know, other terms around first of a kinds and, you know, being the first to do things was always exciting for me. So,
you know, most of us are shaped by and owe a debt of gratitude to a very few, oftentimes, key mentors in our lives. Do you have mentors like that? And if you did, what lessons have you learned from them?
Yeah, so my co-author on the book, Sebastian Wodaneski, he was a long time IBMers recently, now moved to banking and Standard Charter in Singapore, but worked with him for, and actually he was a part of bringing me to Japan and, you know, really getting the right experts and people around him in Japan to help. But I would say one of the biggest things that he always pushed for me, and certainly to, you know, even to be asked by someone to write a book or, you know, help them write a book, you know, those kinds of, you know, what I would kind of call think big, think challenging, right? He was always that kind of person, right? He would just take an idea. I mean, I've gotten multiple patents with him, but always kind of take the things and say, what's beyond that? So again, tied to that innovation, it was always perfect because I always liked, you know, the innovation. Then he went kind of further, even went further in what you would try to think of, you know, in strategy for companies. So I enjoyed working with him immensely. We got the opportunity to work together quite a bit in Japan, and we still talk now. You know, as the banking industry is really transforming, you're seeing so many different things. You know, what was it? Now you can pay people by text, and now you can do, what was the latest thing I saw? ATMs. Businesses can be ATMs, so cashing. So there's a lot of real innovation in finance.
Do you have any favorite books that you've loved over your career, and why?
Well, of course, my own book, because of the time it took. Now,
of course.
So I have to make the plug there for mine. No, just to talk about that book for a second, or again, I really don't, you know, I've been a reader. I tend to read more journals than books per se. You know, as far as keeping myself up with what's going on in the industry. But, you know, really writing a book and really thinking about and understanding how you have to structure and move forward with ideas, and not just, you know, what those things are, but, hey, how do I introduce them to people? How do I spend the time, you know, kind of take them through the, you know, kind of glossary of terms and explain things? And then how much do you want to explain things? Because that's really important. Like I said, it's hard to understand cars and to understand how you talk to your navigation system in a car, you know, while you're driving with this other, these ADAS and adaptive cruise, when you don't explain AI and training or natural language processing in these kind of words to people, you know, a basic understanding for how it works, or quote, how it could be different, right? What do I like about my car now? Now I can just say, hey, take me to that famous golf place in downtown, and it's probably going to come up with Augusta National, right? Whereas before, when you talk to your navigation system, you know, it had to be enter the address, tell me a gas station, you know, very limited words, right? And that's what kind of AI natural language is about, right? Getting it more towards how you and I are talking, not, well, what's that command I have to say to talk to my car? So
it's come a long way.
Yeah.
So what's the next chapter of your life look like?
You know, coming after I came back, you know, I was fortunate. I got a new opportunity with IBM. Like I said, this product management job, I'm super happy with it, global. So, you know, I can still travel, you know, been meeting customers around the world. So that's pretty exciting. But I'm certainly always thinking, again, challenging, innovating. Is it time to go do a startup? You know, or is it time to kind of do my own business, you know, stay with consulting, do that type of stuff? Certainly always open and always thinking, you know, always looking at opportunities. The book has certainly, you know, opened up some different avenues for me and different conversations with people in companies. So so it's been very exciting, but certainly love what I'm doing, and but still always looking for that next challenging horizon and, you know, kind of innovative part of my career. So
are there any closing thoughts or leadership lessons that you want to share with the audience that we haven't touched on at this point?
Yeah. Well, one of the things, you know, I have touched on it briefly at times, and I have been kind of fortunate that early in my career, I got involved with this automotive industry, right? You know, remember when OnStar started, it was three buttons in your car on the rear view mirror, right? And now you have, you know, practically a smartphone and moving screens and heads up displays and stuff in your car. So, but I was fortunate to start in an industry and stay in that industry and actually, you know, develop into what, you know, some people call subject matter expert, right? But that's just something that worked for me. And then now led to write a book, you know, about the connected vehicle industry and the Internet of Things career. So I was very fortunate to do that. I certainly still recommend that to people. There's so many different fields and so many different areas and things that you can get into. I was fortunate that I found my one area, I kind of stuck with it, and then really grew to understand all different parts of it, not just what IBM was doing, but, you know, hey, who are the companies that make the screens, the other software in the car, all of these things, to, you know, really understand how it works and really use that into shaping the type of consulting or the type of business or things that I do and will do in that area in the future. So it's just something that kind of happened by default for me, but, you know, I stayed with it, and, you know, cars ended up being, you know, an area that allowed you to stay with it. Smartphones, right? Unlock your car, first kind of cool function that came to your smartphone outside of talking and, you know, gaming and stuff like that. So, you know, as you look at some of those little technology things over the year, cars are always really adaptive to them. So that's certainly been a fun industry and certainly been rewarding for me.
Well, as you know, my leadership has been applied over the last 25 years to the healthcare field. So I look forward to hopefully someday you or someone like yourself can begin to apply some of that same technology to the healthcare world. You know, we've got some of the greatest technology in healthcare, but at the bedside level and tracking that and being able to use that day to day, I think we're missing. We're way behind even the automobile industry now and the banking industry. So I look forward to being able to have a conversation like this about how we're applying this to healthcare. Listen, I know our listening audience is going to want to find out more about you, about your book, and connect with you. What's the best way, number one, for them to find out about your book and where they can get that? And number two, if they want to find more about you or connect with you, what's the best way?
Certainly the easiest way, you know, LinkedIn, just Google my name. That's Stephen P.H. Perrin. You'll find, you know, my Google link, the book, My Cognitive Automobile Life, you know, Google that as well. It's available on Amazon. And, you know, that's usually the quickest and safest way once, you know, get through LinkedIn, gets to my email, and, you know, I can reach out to you a normal channel. So that's the best.
Fantastic. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. Fascinating stuff. I'm excited to see where this goes in the future. And this is Rob Folliwell for the Folliwell Company and the Ignite Leadership podcast series, saying thank you very much, Steve, for being on the podcast, and make it a great day.
Thank you, Rob.